This podcast is part of the Dark Myths Collective. Visit darkmyths.org to discover more shows like this one. The darkness awaits.
And welcome to the Not Alone podcast. I'm Sam Fredrickson.
I'm Jason Moitoso.
And welcome back, or welcome firstly to 2019. You've done it. Oh my God, you did it.
Yep, we went around the sun.
You didn't think you could, but I knew you could, and here you are. You're beautiful. You're lovely in every way. I'm not.
I'm really confused who you're talking to.
I'm looking at Jason. I am talking to Jason. I'm talking to you, though, the listener, as well. 2018 was a good year for some, a bad year for others. That's pretty much every year. But what matters is all of us that are listening to this now made it. Unless you're listening in the far distant future and you had no concept of 2018 before you started this episode, which would be pretty wild.
Whoa.
Yeah. Sometimes I think about that like one day I'm going to die and my grandchildren will be like, ah, Grandpa's old radio show.
Grandpa was crazy.
Grandpa was a loon. What's going on here? So anyway, if you're listening from the future, I don't know how we say hello there, but in this country,
probably still gonna be hello.
In this country, in this age, we say suh. So suh to all of you. Jason,
you forgot the P there.
No.
Oh God.
S-U-H. Suh. Jason?
Well, I'm an old timer. Yeah, Sam.
Have a good Christmas. Have a good New Year's.
Yeah, man.
Good.
It was good. It went by in a blink of an eye.
That's good. Mine seemed to like
drag on.
Go on, which was fine. It was a wonderful time. Do you got any New Year's resolutions?
No.
No?
I don't make those. I make birthday resolutions.
Really?
Yeah, I just told you this in the time before recording.
I know. This is weird. Like,
right?
Patrons are probably in thinking they like had
time.
A stroke or something. What's going on here? You make birthday resolutions. What were your birthday resolutions this year?
I don't remember.
That's totally fair.
So
that's why I typically don't make New Year's resolutions either.
That's fair.
Last year I did. They were like, read a book every week.
Oh my God.
That didn't happen. I did.
It's 52 books, Sam. That's a lot of books.
I want to say I probably hit closer to like 20 or 25 last year, which was good.
It's not bad.
No, it's not bad. I'd like to up my game this year, but we'll see.
Textbooks.
Thanks for a segue, brah. I'm going to college. So that's fun.
Also means.
Jason, no, I needed to do it in my own time. Okay, here we go. Hi, guys. Hello, all of you, you lovely, wonderful people. We have a terrible announcement to make. Don't worry. The show still here. We're not going
2019
anywhere.
2019 is just a time of transition for us.
A different time for a different place for different people. What I'm trying to say is we're only going to do this every other week now. I'm sorry. All right.
There we go. See, you did it.
So
I'm proud of you.
As Jason skillfully, I mean, after 90 episodes, you're really getting the hang of segues. I'm proud of you. That was a good one. As Jason skillfully allowed me to lean into, and then I skillfully backed away screaming from, is this fact that
it was like you being the kid not wanting to go on the roller coaster, and
you,
I was your friend, like, yeah, let's just, right here. It's just come on.
And then I pee my pants and run to the back of the line and say, I just need to get used to the idea a little more, and when the line goes through again, I'll be fine.
And then
fine.
You realize we have the express pass.
That's true. So, this was a very long and convoluted metaphor. I'm going to school. Because of that, we are going to take the podcast bi-weekly, I think is the right thing to say there. Now, this definitely is a downer in some ways, and I don't blame anybody who's you know, kind of upset by that. However, the good news is...
It allows us time to refine.
It lets us spend more time and energy actually working on the show, as paradoxically as that seems. We're actually able to spend more time on the quality of our episodes, and that's something that personally personally, myself, I felt like has kind of declined. Not that like we're doing worse or anything. It's just that we're not as high of a standard, especially for research and overall knowledge of a subject, that I felt like we were at the beginning. So I'm hoping that if we do this every other week, it'll really give us the opportunity to maybe even get ahead a little bit on research instead of literally doing the notes up until like the minute before I leave for work the day that we're going to record when I get home, the minute I get home from work. So that's ideally one good thing that's going to come out of this. The other good thing is that if you're one of our Patreon members, we are going to be releasing at least one episode a month guaranteed through Patreon. Those episodes are a little different because it is more of a half and half sort of thing where Jason and I kind of split the time evenly between us, as opposed to me kind of taking the storytelling helm and Jason being reactionary and responding and inciting that discussion within it. It's more of just like a half and half venture. Those episodes will typically be supplementary material. So on like series that we do, we might throw in an extra story or an extra encounter or a few extra things in that. Or else, if we don't have any supplementary information, we'll open it up for a poll, or just open it up for you guys to send us messages. And really, anything that you want us to talk about, even if I don't think it's necessarily worthy of a full episode, we'll give the time to, and we'll make a bonus episode out of it. So if you want to learn more about that, you can go to patreon.com/notalonepodcast. Beyond that, 2019 is going to be very much the same. We're not going to be, like I said, shutting down. We're not going to be doing anything crazy, anything wild. We're just going to take some time to kind of sharpen our trade, as well as pursue, hopefully, things in the real life that when I'm no longer in my mid-20s will be able to benefit me and my family. So we'll see.
What are you going to major in, Sam?
I'm going to major, thanks for the question. That was weird.
Are you not sure yet?
No, I am sure.
Okay.
Pretty sure. And it's going to be media production. Media production. So I'm going to be
doing media production.
Media. I'm going to go into space.
Excited.
I'm going to take all those rocks.
Are you a supervillain?
Yes. Dr. Evil. I'm going to be studying audio and video production. And, you know, my dream one day is to be like an editor for HGTV. I know a lot of people that comes out of left field. I would love to be like the guy cutting together the footage of like a Fixer Upper episode and doing like that. This is what it was like before. This is what it's like after. Because Chip and Joe might do the actual work, but it comes down to the editing to really show that difference. So ideally,
we're going to have to delete all this content.
No, I'm keeping it in. And who knows?
No. Our content.
Oh,
now.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, this podcast is going to get buried.
Yeah. Just change your name.
And this will give Jason more time to be less argumentative in his real life as well. Maybe pursue some more artistic endeavors, stuff like that. So. Well, that's a little cagey. So it's, again, like, I can't say it without saying I'm sorry, but I really think this is going to be good in a lot of ways for us. So,
all right. So now,
thank you all.
Talked about what the rest of 2019 is going to look like for us.
Yes.
Let's talk about today, though.
Let's talk about today.
Talk about the evils of carbs.
So this episode must really be like Jason's dream. All of your training has prepared you for this. Would you like, at the end, we can just talk about why carbs are bad, or we could lead with it, because what we're looking at today is a very interesting event that took place in a tiny little village called Pont-Saint-Esprit. I don't know if that's really how it's pronounced. That was me trying to be French.
Well, let's just roll with it.
Yeah, Pont-Saint-Esprit.
There you go, confidence. That's what
yes, that exactly. Pont-Saint-Esprit. Now, that translates to the Bridge of the Holy Spirit, and it's this little village in southern France. That bridge that is literally the name of the town is the biggest and most important landmark in the town.
Is that the bridge that they had to go over to save Private Ryan?
No, okay. I don't think so. Maybe. It didn't mention that on the Wikipedia page, and I'd be surprised if not. It's known, especially from at least the 1200s, this bridge was used by pilgrims on their way to the Holy Land.
That's cool.
Yeah, it is. It's pretty neat.
Were they used for like crusaders then too then? I'm assuming, probably. It sounds like maybe like a highway of sorts.
Yeah, it's just a...
It's the way you go to get to the Holy Land.
One of those towns that have been around forever. forever, and it's kept alive because it's, you know, close to a major thoroughfare, that sort of thing. And it's
same reason why cities pop up around railways and ports.
Now, it's this very beautiful, very old, very small place without very much to do. Of course, it has its beautiful cathedrals, its famous bridge, but other than that, there's not really a big draw to it.
So would you refer to it as like picturesque?
I'd say it's picturesque, yeah. But this place is remembered for those quote-unquote in the know for a different reason in these days. Like I said, it's not a major culture center. It's not even a major tourist center. It's just this quiet little village. However, it will always be remembered for an event that ended up killing somewhere between 5 and 10 people, hospitalizing at least another 50, and affecting, your estimates are anywhere from 250 to 500.
Wait a second, is this that dang wolf again?
No, it's not the Beast of Gévaudan, which is still my favorite episode we've ever done, my favorite subject we've ever covered. That was like episode 10, I want to say, if even that, might have been like 7.
He was
7.
Not a good boy.
No, he was also probably a human serial killer, literally in wolf's clothing. So, but who knows? No, that happened in Gévaudan. This is a different part of the country. As far as I know, it's not as foresty down there. It's more of a, there's a bridge, so there's water. But I think it's more of like a seaside sort of feel as well.
More Mediterranean?
So, I think. I don't know for sure.
Okay, that's fair.
But what we're looking at, this event, it caused, like I said, somewhere between 250 and 500 people to undergo feelings, thoughts, physical and mental issues that for some of them would last the rest of their lives, whether they were a very short rest of their lives or 60 or 70 years. Now, this is the case of the cursed bread. Now, Jason, you hate bread. You have a love-hate relationship.
I love bread, but I don't like what bread does to my body.
Why is bread so... Why? Why does bread do these things to us?
So, bread is wonderful because it's a pretty high-energy, rich food. So, bread has been a main staple in our diets for a very long time, mainly because it's pretty easy to produce. And again, it's a fairly decent meal when you're talking about keeping energy and calorie intake up, which is kind of what you need to survive. But now with how active at least most Americans are, the fact that we consume much larger proportions of carbs and carbohydrates and bread in general is not necessarily good for the activity level that we do. We are not all Michael Phelps in the pool burning 5,000 calories a day while we chomp on a loaf of bread.
True.
Just we've just skewed essentially our ratio of activity to how much carbs are in our diet. And that's the unfortunate thing.
What's really impressive here is that I didn't put anything in the notes about asking Jason that question. He just had that knowledge ready to go. He just knows about bread.
It's what I have to tell myself every day before I eat a loaf of bread. It's like, oh, this one slice. I literally bought a smaller loaf of, like, the slices themselves are physically smaller.
Mm-hmm.
So it'd be a head game for me being like, oh, I ate a slice of bread today.
I'm fine.
This
I'm
is
fine.
A smaller slice now. It's even better.
On the other side of things, bread has always had a kind of mystical quality to it. Bread and grain are the very first things that I would say nurtured human civilization. More so than just the wandering game of the fields, it's this bread and the cultivation of it that allowed us to create empires and armies. And as we look, there are even like...
Bread and cheese.
And there are even some sources that say that, like, when you look at the secret or the Garden of Eden in the Hebrew Old Testament, or
oh
in the
God,
Hebrew Bible.
Just loaves of bread everywhere?
Well, what it is that we often think about this fruit.
It's actually carbs.
We think of the fruit of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil as an apple, where in reality, a lot of scholars think that it may actually be grain. It may actually be
a bagel
that took mankind from that place and allowed us to progress into this one. Bread is, especially in a place like France, which had such a strong faith-based system of life through the Middle Ages and onward, bread was the body of Christ. You know, that's in the communion and in your sacraments and things like that. Bread is important to humanity. And for that reason, as we'll see here in a moment, this case kind of, it takes on a little bit more sinister of a tone than if this was the case of the cursed, you know, I don't even know, the cursed fruit or the cursed vegetable. Those
romaine lettuce, probably.
Yeah, it's romaine, guys. That's its own thing. But bread, especially to the French, is connected to life in every way. Now, this chaos that was caused by the cursed bread, it would spread over the course of about 10 days, with the first accounts taking place on the 16th and the very final trappings of the crisis fading away for good and people coming back to normal on the 26th is the very last time anybody has something happen to them. Now, the first indications that something was amiss took place on that first day of the 16th, primarily as digestive issues. Now, the local physicians found themselves overrun with reports of fever, cramping, nausea, severe vomiting, and the like. However, it mostly stayed in the body. Only about 30% of people reported expulsions from one end or the other, if you catch my drift. Yeah.
Gross.
However, some of the other symptoms here were a little more specific and a little more strange. You had people complaining of a constriction of the pharynx, which is the part of the throat that links the mouth and the nasal cavity together. I don't even know.
Oh, weird. So it's like way up
in the back.
There.
Back and up. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't even know what that would feel like. I'm sure it wouldn't be great. I'm sure it'd be a really terrible thing to happen. Other individuals complained of even stranger physical sensations, kind of waves of temperature change. First, it would be a wave of extreme heat and a warmth throughout the entire body, kind of just radiating out, not necessarily like a fever, but something pulsing. Yeah, something pulsing from within them. And then that pulsing would change into a cold pulse.
Sounds like my mom with heat flashes.
It could be, man. Sure.
Love you, mom.
The other thing that people complained about, or they didn't necessarily complain about it, but when they went to the physicians for these other symptoms, the physicians found that their heart rates were dipping beneath 50 beats a minute. Like, they were really...
Whoa.
Yeah. They were kind of just going into standby mode, it seemed. But within a few hours of these first initial reports, more disturbing aspects came to light. While some of them seemed to be purely physical, and I'd say probably the majority of people had purely physical, digestive, or even these weird flashes.
Sickness, but like normal disease and ailment kind
yeah,
of symptoms.
Sick. Sickness, okay. But like sickness, you know, yeah. Like, oh, you're not feeling great. However, other people had some very strange things happen, one of which was a postman by the name of Leon Armunier. Now, he was making his rounds and he felt fine. Like, he hadn't been saying, oh, I feel digestive issues or anything like that. He felt completely...
No upset stomach.
No nausea, upset stomach.
Stop it. Pepto-Bismol.
Pepto-Bismol. However, and this is an interesting one because people observed him and then he himself was able to give an account. Now, from the observations of the outside, Leon started wavering on his bicycle, kind of zigzagging and moving back and forth.
A little bit too much wine, huh?
It could be because then he just falls over.
Ooh.
And stops moving completely.
Well, we have training wheels, Leon.
Now,
you're an adult, but no shame.
According to Leon, he had the feeling that he was getting smaller and smaller. Almost
Benjamin Button style thing, huh?
Not necessarily. Almost to the point of ceasing to exist. But before he hit that threshold, before he no longer was part of this world, he looked down at his arms gripping his bicycle. And when he did, he saw serpents coiled around them, contracting. And he saw flame wreathing his limbs and giving off intense heat and light.
Wow, that's a bad trip.
And it is.
Yikes, that's terrifying.
And it was at that point that he fell over and could not move. That was another thing that happened.
I would have just thought I was Ghost Rider.
Finally! We've done it!
I signed that contract months ago.
Now, this was another very common physical symptom was convulsions and muscle contractions, things rendering people immobile while also there being this twitching that continued to happen. And that's exactly what happened to Leon. He was taken to the hospital. And after they got him back physically to where he was at, he was still complaining of seeing and feeling these things. Again, out of all the weirdness here, I would say the weirdest thing that he felt was that he was getting smaller and smaller and smaller. And so...
I can just imagine a cartoon and, like, his voice getting higher and
well,
higher.
Hey, what are you doing with me now?
That's what he thought was happening to him. And that's what he thought was going to happen to him. And so they took him and they put him in a straitjacket. And they put him in a room with three other teenage boys. Now, Leon himself was in about his late 20s. But these boys had to be chained to their bed because they kept trying to break out.
Those ruffians.
They kept trying to jump out of these second story windows. Now, Leon's symptoms were by no means unique. And in fact, this motif of serpents is probably the biggest one, the biggest thing that happened to people when they were having these visions or hallucinations. There was one man who claimed that there were serpents coming out of his belly. He claimed this as he was, he claimed this as he was being pulled out of the river because he was trying to drown himself to make it stop. Now, yeah, there was another woman. She didn't say exactly what was happening. And this is a common motif as well. You see the aftermath in a lot of these cases. They won't even tell you why they did what they did, but there was one woman who tore off her clothing and rammed herself into a wall over and over until she had broken her ribs and passed out. Yeah, there was a...
It's like when you hear stories of meth addicts that, you know, things are crawling underneath their skin.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. There was something in them that trying to get out. And terrible enough...
It was the carbs.
They knew. Terrible enough, the other symptom that only seemed to affect individuals who were already having some sort of an issue. Okay, so not even the digestive people. They were having their own problems. But one specific element that went in with these hallucinations was insomnia after the fact.
So wait, was there a crossover between the symptoms?
Okay, yes.
So it was clearly linked that the folks that were having also the stomach issues were also hallucinating.
But not everybody.
Right, in the Venn diagram of things.
There is a crossover there.
The lucky half are the ones that
are just vomiting their brains out.
Exactly.
The unlucky half
are scared out of their minds.
Yeah. Yeah. And so that's where you get like I said, one of the more common things that happened was on the physical side, or the common weird things that happened was the heat waves and the cold waves. And then that's paired with these visions of fire. Visions of fire and visions of serpents were the two biggest things that people reported at the time. And it's most likely that they had these heat waves, and then that compared with like muscle contractions kind of give you the feeling of something moving around inside you. I don't know if it's ever, I'm sure it happens to everybody when you're just like hanging out and your hand's just like this, and then your muscle starts twitching for no reason at all. And you look at it and you can see it twitching and it's terrible. So that, but you also literally believe that that's a snake trying to come out of your hand. Yeah. Yeah. It was wild. The insomnia, though, as you might imagine, really just made everything a lot worse. People who were having just some minor, well, I say minor visions of snakes, but, you know, some more tameable hallucinations as days went on.
Tameable, huh?
Yeah.
Them snakes.
Charming. As days went on, 10 days to be precise, without any sleep, as you can imagine, things got a lot worse. Now,
people don't function very well with that little sleep.
They don't function very well if they're normal average people who get less than like 5 hours of sleep. Like most of us, if we need to do it in a pinch, can do it with six. Some of us can probably do it with five. Most people beneath that are just useless. They're cranky. They're just not feeling good. And then you're also already seeing snakes and things. But what's interesting is that the people who especially showed this insomnia, they went through these kind of psychological waves as well. So they started with a giddiness and like a kind of a joy and just laughing at the whole situation.
So like a euphoria,
which then turned into complete and total abstract terror and horror.
So they're having just like a bipolar mood swing back and forth.
Kind of.
As well.
Kind of, yeah. Very fast and very frequent. There were other reports, though, of people who had nothing to do with snakes, who had nothing to do with fire. One of them was a man who rushed into the doctor's office. He was screaming and begging for help, and they said, what's wrong? And he said, you have to help me catch my heart. And they said, what do you mean? Is this Kingdom Hearts? What are we talking about here, sir? And
there's a new one coming out.
I know. I'm so excited.
I'm not.
We can talk about that later.
Sure.
And he says, you have to help me catch my heart. And he says, what do you mean? And he says, my heart escaped through my feet. Look, there it goes. If you don't catch it, I'm going to die. I'm going to die. He knew he was on the edge of death itself. Now, there's another young man. His name is Gabriel Valadieri. The police were called to his home and took took him to the hospital after he was not assaulting his roommates necessarily, but just screaming over and over. And he was saying, "I'm dead. I'm dead. My head is made of copper and my stomach is full of snakes." Yeah.
Man, this is some hardcore stuff.
Other people, and this is where I said, you see the aftermath, but you, not everybody, not even the majority of people who went through things were comfortable explaining what happened to them after the fact. And one other common thing that people saw was their friends, their family members, their neighbors, they distorted, they changed, and they went from being these people who were very close to them into becoming beasts, like monsters. Not even not animals. Not like, oh, you turned into a wolf. Although
these horrible creatures.
Yeah. Some people did see like, oh, you turned into a dog. Oh, you turned into a cat. But just like these indescribable, twisted, terrible things. Many could not even find the words during or after the event to explain if they wanted to, other than to just say that the people that they were with, they were no longer human. And as the days wore on and rest was unable to be had by those who found themselves under siege by either themselves or their neighbors from an outside source, things really took an even more drastic turn for the worse. Now, some sources, they'll tell you that this like event turned into a kind of Day of the Dead scenario Day of the Living Dead? Night of the Living Dead? That's it.
Sure.
Yeah. A Night of the Living Dead scenario wherein you had people, things, creatures, monsters wandering the streets and like everybody else was locked up inside.
So did anyone think that this was like
the end of the world?
Judgment? Yeah.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Oh yeah. That is a huge motif, especially looking back after the fact. There was even on the climax of everything, which was the night between the 25th and 26th, because for whatever reason on the 26th, everything was pretty much fine. But the night from the 25th to 26th was referred to as locals first and then worldwide as the night of the apocalypse. Like that's just what they called it because everything went so freaking off the rails. But there was definitely a good amount of like, Johnny, come inside. Don't be out there. There's scary things. Because
here, come eat your bread.
Come eat your bread, Johnny.
Here's the grilled cheese.
Got it from the baker. Because not only then do you have the human side of this, but you actually have a natural side as well, where you had dogs that were walking along fine and then started barking at things that weren't there. And not like it's the middle of the night and your dog decides to be
heard
a jerk.
Something and
and stares into the darkness and growls, like attacking and throwing itself at imaginary things. There was also a very strange report of ducks.
Because you feed ducks bread. Oh my God.
Oh my ducks God. Standing up and walking like penguins is what they said. They waddled single file like penguins.
That's interesting, and I'll bring up why later.
Okay, cool. You had cats that would try to eat stones and you'd find broken cat teeth.
Aww.
Yeah, it was bad. It was poor terrible. Cats. And so not only, you know, as the days went on, the majority of people that this affected found help somehow. Either they ended up being restrained by their friends and family, they were taken to the hospital and left there and in that care. And so the streets themselves were pretty fine.
But did people search for a religious relief though too? Was it something that like people thought it was like this mass possession kind of thing? Or was it much more, we know that this is some sort of actual sickness?
We'll talk about the religious side of it. There is a religious side of it. I am sure.
Yeah, this is a bridge that you go pilgrim on.
Yeah. I am sure that the church was active and in full swing at the time, but you don't, especially during the time, you really get a feeling of like, just hold on, we're all going to make it. We can be okay. You don't have, even like the police were out and they were doing things, but in this tiny town, it was 4,000 people at the time. And so for even just 250, 300 people to all be going wild at the same time, that's a bit more than their police could offer. There is a religious side to it as well. There was like during a storm so this was in August. I think the storm was in May. They have
what year again?
1951.
Okay, gotcha.
Yeah.
Mid of the century.
Yeah. They had a terrible storm and at the cathedral, the statue of the Virgin Mary, an arm was lobbed off of it by the storm. And so like at the time people were like, that sucks. That, come on now. It's a good statue. Let's fix it up. But like looking backwards, suddenly they were like, like, what if that was some sort of portent? What if that was some sort of way of being like, judgment is coming for this town? And then there's this really interesting aspect of it as well, wherein none of the vicars, nobody associated with the church, got sick at all. Nobody. So we'll talk about that.
They're the ones that pass out all the bread.
Hey, now. We'll talk about that in a moment as well, in the aftermath. What happened as well, though, as the situation got more and more dire, is that individuals started to be, they came up against things that they didn't think they'd ever have to come up to, and terrible things. Like, I know all of this has been terrible, but for instance, probably the most famous thing you hear about this case, like that's repeated in every single article, is the situation of Charles Grangeau. Charles was an 11-year-old boy at the time of the panic, and for reasons that, again, he never explained, he and nobody was like, you need to talk about this. Everyone was like, yeah, that's fine, don't talk about it. He was found trying to strangle his grandmother to death.
Oh.
Thankfully, that did not happen, and everything was fine from there. Not Alone is sponsored by Robinhood. Robinhood is an investing app that lets you buy and sell stocks, ETFs, options, and cryptos, all commission-free. Now, Robinhood has a commitment to making financial services work for everyone, not just the wealthy, and that's why when you're using their application, you're going to find a simple and intuitive, clear design. With data that is presented in an easy-to-digest way, the end result is a non-intimidating way for stock market newcomers to invest for the first time with true confidence. And while other brokerages may charge up to $10 for every trade, Robinhood does not charge commission fees. You can trade your stocks and keep all of your profits. And like I said, it's easy to understand. There are charts, there's market data, and the app is so simplified that you can place a trade in just 4 taps of your smartphone. And if you're not sure what you'd like to invest in, the Robinhood web platform also lets you view stock collections, things like the 100 most popular stocks, or break it down by sectors, things like entertainment and social media, and even curated categories like female CEOs. And in addition to that, they provide analyst ratings of whether to buy, hold, or sell for every stock. You can learn by doing. You can learn how to invest as you build your portfolio. You can discover new stocks and track your favorite companies with personalized news feeds, and you can receive custom notifications for price movements so you never miss the right moment to invest. Now, Robinhood is giving all of our listeners a free stock. Now, these aren't some 2-bit penny stocks. This is stuff like Apple, Ford, or Sprint to either help start your portfolio or to continue to build it. Now, you can sign up at alone.robinhood.com. That's alone, A-L-O-N-E, .robinhood.com. Head on over, get your free stock, and start making your money work for you today. But at the peak of madness, okay, this is this night between the 25th and the 26th, referred to as the night of the apocalypse. And it starts, that reference starts in town. Some people think that the mainstream media, which as they are wont to do, picked up the story and then really popped it up. But this apocalyptic setting was what people were feeling in town. Mm-hmm. And then the press just ran with that. What you had was kind of an escape that happened. You had multiple people actually break out of the asylums that they were in. Thankfully, nobody was able to do any damage to anybody else, but 2 specific accounts of 2 different men showed them doing damage to themselves. The first one was a man who said, "I am a dragonfly," and he just jumped out the window. He was fine. Like,
what story was he on?
Second story.
Okay.
Yeah. He was fine.
That's a drop.
He didn't break. I mean, I'm sure he broke something, but he wasn't too bad off from what I can tell. Here's the other thing that you come up against in this. You're working from French documents. So like, this can be a pretty patchy story because you just find these different like accounts of like, this guy jumped out the window and that's all you hear. But then later on you hear that like, oh, this guy died and that guy didn't. So as far as we know, the guy who said, "I am a dragonfly," jumped out the window, hit the ground, was as fine as one could be after that. However, in either the same or a different asylum a little while later, there was a man who said, "I am an airplane." He jumps out the second story window. He breaks both of his legs.
Well,
and then
could be worse.
And then then this is where it's like, I would scream and run away if I saw this happen. He broke both of his legs, kind of crouched for a moment, and then got up and ran 20 feet. And then he finally collapsed.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oof.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
On that night as well, this final last moment, according to Time Magazine, there was an entire psychiatric ward that almost, and again, we're looking 60 years back, but theoretically, in unison.
Close to 70.
Yeah. In unison, they started to scream and they started to talk about these flowers that were blooming from their chest or their eyes or their arms or their head or their knees. These red crimson flowers that were blooming from within them, that were blossoming and then wilting and dying and passing away, and over and over and over and over. And finally, they started screaming that the heads had turned to molten lead. And so you just have this very like Salvador Dali-esque vision of a hospital ward wherein the people in it truly believe that their heads are melting away while flowers are sprouting out of their body. And then the last thing, and the really the last reason why this is a night of the apocalypse, is that this night specifically, people started claiming to have communication with something higher. They didn't say what. All they said is that they could hear the sound of heaven. They could hear the sound of heaven. They could hear the voice of God reverberating in their heads. And this wasn't like a, in your normal days, I don't know why I said normal days. In your more modern times, we think about like, oh, the voice of God. And like, it's this nice, gentle, like, don't do that to me. You know better. Or take a left here, Barbara, and you won't get into a car crash.
I would have assumed it would be like Gilbert Gottfried.
That would be terrible. Oh, I'd be so upset. But what these people are referring to is the sort of thing like you read in Exodus, and God speaks to the Hebrews and they're like, stop. Oh my God, this is terrible. And there's loud cracking and you can't handle it. Like you fade away, you get burned away by the presence of this greater being. And that's the voice that they heard. It was not this kind, gentle thing. It was the scary voice, the loud voice. Now, that next morning on the 26th, some people say the 27th. Again, you're working with French sources, it's hard to say. Finally, doors were unbolted. People realized that the clamoring, the banging about hadn't been going on for a few hours. And so they leave the houses. And I mean, you just find chaos. You find a lot of like property damage. Again, people were literally hurling themselves at walls. They were breaking windows. You find dead animals everywhere. Birds, cats, dogs, pigeons, ducks, all of it just scattered around town. And then unfortunately, you find 5 to 7 people dead, or 5 to 10 people dead as well. You have about 2/3 of them, which died theoretically in the aftermath, it said, of cardiovascular issues, of basically the heart just collapsing in on itself. And then you do have a few terrible accounts of suicide as well. Now, as we previously mentioned, this ended with somewhere between 250 and 500 people being affected in total, at least 50 people being hospitalized, but probably closer to 100. And while people, some of them, were able to recover, you know, what a terrible thing to happen, and now we're fine. There are other people who, because of this, they survived, but they were never able to work. They were never able to hold a relationship. A lot of them stayed in the asylums until they died, whether that was, like I said, a few years later or 60 years later. And for instance, you have just this idea of it being so impactful on the town itself as a part of what it is. You have every person who lived in that village knew about this, and it stayed on their consciousness for years. Then the now old Charles Grandjean said in 2017, talking to a French magazine, he says, I almost died that day and I'd like to know why. And he's definitely not alone in this, because as you might imagine, as soon as the frenzy itself dies down, this cry for answers comes up.
When it's almost 70 years later, do we have answers?
Almost.
Sort of?
We have two answers. One is the perfect answer and theoretically should have been really easy to prove, and while never disproven, was never fully proven. And then you have another one that I think is the real answer.
Oh dear.
Now, from the get-go.
We all know what that means.
We do, don't we? Yes. I think this is episode 90. After 90 episodes, I think we all know what that means. From the get-go, the very first suspect in this case was that fickle mistress, Mother Nature herself, with the aid of serious government mismanagement. So, like I mentioned, almost more so than any other civilization, any other culture, bread, the French and bread go together like French bread. Like, it is...
You did so much effort.
I know. It is imperative for French people to have bread, especially during this time, and I'm not trying to be, like, stereotypical.
A little.
I know it sounds that way, but it is. It's ingrained in the culture.
Ingrained? Really?
Uh-huh. So, it's wow. Basically a sort of informal national symbol. And if you don't believe me, you can ask historian Stephen L. Kaplan, who wrote over 1,000 pages on the French, on the history of bread in France in the 20th century alone, in a book which would have been a great source of info on this event if I could read French, which I cannot. However, due to the conditions in the first years of recovery after the liberation of France following World War II, the government found themselves handling every aspect of the bread game, from who was growing it, how much they were supposed to grow, what they were supposed to grow and when, how it was milled, and even how much, when, and where local bakers were able to buy flour. The baker did not have any other option then, for instance, if he found that the flour he was working with was subpar. He basically just had to say, well, that looks a little hokey, but we'll bake it, the germs bake out, it's fine, right? How many times have we all said that? It's fine, it'll just bake out.
I am never eating over here again.
Like, if you drop, like, if you're making chicken, uh-huh. You're making a chicken, and you're about to bake that chicken.
Yes.
Then you drop part of it on the ground, and you pick it up, and you say the germs are going to bake out. That's
no,
sort of a thing.
No, I don't.
You
do
throw
that.
Away the chicken?
Chicken's gone.
That's wild. Even if it's just like, boom, it's down in your back, it bakes out. This is going to be a thing that people talk about, I'm sure. They're going to tweet at me, tell me, Sam, you idiot. Germs don't bake out.
It's gross.
I'm pretty sure it bakes out.
I mean, it depends on how hot it gets, I guess, but like, bacteria survives in very hot places.
True.
So there's also that. Anyway,
now
it'll bake out. Slogan of the day.
Now, food poisoning, however, was not necessarily uncommon during this time. It definitely wasn't common, right? It wasn't happening all over the place, but it was not unheard of. And a lot of times it did come from bread itself because of these strict regulations. Now, in 1951, rationing in France had been over for 2 years, and the majority of stuff you could buy freely and do whatever. It was really just bread that was still under this restriction. Now, because of the very specific symptoms that match what happened here, the digestive and the hallucinations, the primary culprit, the main suspect, was a very specific kind of fungus that some of you may know a bit about, probably know more about me, or know more than I do about it, but that would be ergot. Now, Jason, do you know about ergot? I'm sure you do.
I do!
Yeah. Do you want to tell me about it?
Sure.
Yeah, go ahead.
It's a fungus that typically, infects. Yeah, I'm gonna go with infects. Okay. Infects like rye and other cereals. Rye is the most common that we interact with. Otherwise, it's also wheat and barley for the most part. But essentially what it does is kind of, I'm gonna say infect wheat plants, cereals really, during its... Oh man, what cycle is it?
Wow.
It's like, I'm sorry. I know this is thrilling.
You know more about ergot than I do.
No, it infects the plant like during its seeding process and basically kind of takes over during the pollination period. And it's the spores are all asexual, which is kind of interesting as well. But essentially, it kind of hijacks wheat and barley's way of reproducing.
Mm.
So it kind of it's an infection. It's a parasite of a fungus, which works out really well. Now, as far as the side effects of ergot, generally speaking, this is why it's interesting. Is usually it only affects in the hallucinogenic manner in mammals, which is why it's weird that you brought up birds. Also having the issue. And it's not like this is anything new to us. It's been around as long as civilization. One of the earliest documentations of ergot and its effects on us comes from, I believe it's like 600 or 800 BC what was it? It was Assyria, where they kind of documented the side effects from it. So, and it's pretty easy to spot too. It's like black, apparently. Mm-hmm. So it looks just like mold almost.
Yeah, it does. Thank you. That was awesome. It really does blacken or kind of what I read was more of a gray, just like a pale gray that spreads over the grain itself.
Gross.
Ergot as well.
That should be a warning sign for anyone.
Well, it should be. And it was. But again, that's where this government mismanagement comes into play. Ergotism is a viable idea here precisely because the government was being so strict about the flour that you got and when you got it. And basically, bakers were in a situation where if you didn't bake, you couldn't just buy more flour. You couldn't say, this was bad, I'm going to go get another batch. You just had to bake, or you had to miss out on a week of work, you know? And who can afford that, especially in a recovery period? But ergot was also used to synthesize LSD and has often been kind of synonymous with it ever since. Now, ergotism has been cited as the source of all sorts of different weird, inexplicable events, including the now famous, or now infamous, dancing plague of 1518, which caused over 400 people, again, in France, to dance until they dropped, with at least a handful of them never getting back up.
This is what that town in Footloose was preaching.
Exactly. It's true. Dancing leads to ergotism, not the other way around.
It's clear.
You also have, and I don't know, I am not an expert, and I could not tell you for sure, but you do have people saying more recently that ergotism could also be responsible for the visions from the young women who kicked off the Salem witch trials, and that there was a batch of bad rye going around, or weed of some kind. Ergot got into it, and then these women, or these young girls, saw, you know, Goody Proctor consorting with the devil, that sort of a thing. So
I'm not sure about that one.
I agree. I'm not 100% sold on it, but now it should
also
be...
because ergot tends to spread a little bit more frequently in warmer climates, tropical areas in general.
Yeah,
which makes more sense if you're close to the Mediterranean.
Yeah. Now it should be no surprise that even before a formal investigation could be held, when the news went worldwide, and it did go worldwide, it went under the banner of ergotism. It popped up in America in the New York Times in no time. There was a French medical journal, or not French, British medical journal, that was published within weeks, detailing how this was definitely ergotism, that was the culprit. So the only thing left to do was to find out who, what face they could blame, what individual could be.
Yeah, you have public outcry.
Yeah, you want an answer. Yeah. Now, in this case, the initial finger was pointed almost immediately at a man by the name of Roche Briand. Now, Roche was one of four bakers who geographically, and also just who was selling bread at what time, could have been responsible for the outbreak of ergotism, and he was the fanciest man of them all. Everybody knew that he would often bleach his flour in order to make his bread whiter and more attractive to the consumer. Everybody claimed he had the best bread, and so that's where, when I were talking about like the church, theoretically, and I don't know the exact situation, but a lot of times in these smaller towns, the church is looked after fine. The church and the clergy are actually more of the higher paid people in the town itself. Mm-hmm. So it would make sense, with him being kind of catering to that middle class, upper middle class, he would be the one that the clergy would go and buy bread from.
Right.
But again, no member of the church was affected in any way by this.
That is weird, because he does have the prettiest bread.
He has the prettiest bread. He made it the best. You know, it's conjecture for sure, but the fact that it was just such a wide net. I mean, if you've got 250 to 500 people being affected, that's almost, I mean, depending on what, where we are on that scale, that's about 10%, if not even a little higher, of the entire population of this town being affected.
Right.
And you're telling me that no one who has anything to do with the church. So that's one conspiracy theory, and it is a conspiracy theory.
They're on low carb.
They know it. They've got it. Yeah. The other thing that Charles Granier said in that interview that he gave in, I want to say it was 2017, or no, it was 2011, because it was 60 years later. He said something very interesting, which was at the time, everyone was, not everybody, but it was pretty well believed that this was a kind of attack against the people to stop a populist uprising, that people felt that their lot, this was right before France entered a great period of recovery and economic growth that put them back at the top of the world. But still, at this point, they were still recovering from World War II. Like I said, rationing had just ended. Their bread was still being strictly controlled. Life just wasn't super great at the time. And so some more left-leaning radical individuals may or may not have been advocating for an uprising or some sort of a bargaining to
another
get
revolution.
Life back to what it should be. Yes. And so...
when in doubt, that's what France does.
So people have this other concern. conspiracy theory, that this was a way of testing some sort of system to put down that, or to put it down, just utilizing, again, that faith component, that idea that this was some sort of divine apocalyptic scenario, maybe because people were spending too much time thinking about, you know, overthrowing this and that, and not having as much devotion to God and their community as they should. That theoretically was one pretty big idea that was going around at the time. And that is backed up because, especially in this case, Roche was a very good friend of the mayor of the town.
Yes.
And the mayor, as evidence begins to mount against Roche, the mayor like obfuscates it. He's like, we need to get down to the bottom of this. So we need to get everybody. Even though at the point, I believe it's that at the point when the mayor officially ordered that they needed to spend all their time and resources looking at every bakery, it was already established that at least the majority, and then it would finally be established that literally every single person who was affected ate bread from Roche's bakery. They did not get their bread anywhere else. But the mayor was like, we gotta be thorough. And in reality, the idea is that he was just trying to protect his friend. Yeah.
Okay.
Protect his friend is one idea. Or secondly, propagate the sort of, again, authoritarian, like,
still probably a good idea to investigate every bakery.
Of course. That's where the conspiracy...
That's due diligence.
Yeah. That's where the conspiracy comes into play. I don't necessarily think that's what happened. I think that it was just like, well, we're just trying to do our jobs. We need to be thorough. But the more paranoid side of it, and you can see why people would be paranoid after this event, they thought, okay, this is you know, buddy-buddy. And theoretically, even, well, if they can tie it back to Roche, they can tie it to the person above him and above him, and maybe it'll get back to the mayor eventually, you know? But the mayor could not protect Roche for long. Finally, he was implicated in the event. However, here we see this prime question. Who's at fault for this? Is it Roche, the baker who was just doing what he could with what he could? Was it the farmer whose grain was corrupted? Or was it the miller? This kind of in between the two. The one who theoretically was taking the grain, inspecting it, milling it, and saying, yes, this is good, and it's ready to be released.
Well, seeing that you just spent literally four times the amount of time describing what a miller does,
yeah,
as to the farmer and the, yeah, baker, I'm assuming blame got casted on the miller.
On the miller. Because the only other option would be the government. It was the government's fault for creating the system that one had to cut these corners in order to survive. But of course, you can't blame the government.
It sounds like you could just kind of blame everyone, really.
Yes.
The farmer should know that his crop is bad.
Sure.
The miller should also know that the barley or the wheat, the whatever, is bad.
Mm-hmm.
And the baker can probably tell that flour is off at some way.
I agree.
And all of that should go back to saying, hey, we've got a problem, to whoever is in charge.
Yeah, but that's not what happened. They arrested the miller. On the 31st of August, they arrested Maurice Mallet, who was a miller who supplied the flour for the bread. However, this is where it gets really interesting.
It's not the milling process that the fungus gets in. It's
the farming.
The
yeah.
Yeah.
Here's what's interesting. There's a little part of this that ergotism can't necessarily explain, but it is the biggest and best explanation. However, when they went all the way back up the chain, they found no evidence of ergot in any of the crops, in any of the flour, in any of the bread. If there was any at all, everybody agreed that it was like a passable amount, that this should not have even affected one person, much less up to 500 individuals. And so once this happened, they had to release the miller, because suddenly it wasn't just that, oh, where does the blame lie? It was that there was no ergot. There was nothing to try this miller on. They were wrong. And that's why this is still considered unsolved to this day. People still continue to look back and say, well, it was ergotism. These fit these symptoms. And they do very, very well.
So was it just a cover up to make sure that people still have trust in the government?
That could be one idea. Oh. I like the way you're thinking there. That is one idea. But there are other ideas as well. Now, that's the thing, is they didn't just say, no, it's not ergot, and then shut it down. And there's a reason as to why that wouldn't be beneficial given the other answer that we're thinking here. Because once they said it wasn't ergot, they threw other things at it. They said, well, maybe it's mercury poisoning. Maybe it is an irresponsible use of pesticides or fungicides. Maybe even Roche, again, this baker who is known for having the whitest bread in town, maybe it was one of the whitening agents that he used. But none of this stuck. And so this case of the cursed bread stays unsolved to this day. Or does it?
Oh, no.
Jason, let me ask you something.
All right, ask away.
Policemen, cops, good cops, good, sure, honest Frenchmen, okay, just trying to do their job. How do they formulate a theory, especially when the most obvious answer turns out to not be correct? correct?
I don't know.
They go to the specialists. You see it all the time. Specialist testimony, things like this and that. They turn to the specialists. And for some reason or the other, I can't find exactly why it was this group of people, but the specialists that were called in the case of the cursed bread, were Swiss scientists from a company called Sandoz Chemical Company. Now, these men came into the village as experts. They were led by one of their most successful members, a man who had ended up changing the world already by 1951, although his face could not have been recognizable to the majority of people walking those streets. His name was Dr. Albert Hoffman. Now, it was his team that threw out these options. First off, that pursued ergotism and then found no ergotism. But then really they relied on them to throw out these additional options. Mercury, pesticides, fungicides, bleaching agents. Each one of them disproved or found to be impossible to begin with. And it was this group, led by Dr. Hoffman, that returned to the Sandoz Chemical Company, supposedly in defeat. Supposedly unable to close this case and feeling just terrible about the madness, the loss of life, and the loss of quality of life that had happened. 2 years later, a man exited a 10th-story window in New York City, falling to his death. This man had, days before, had his own world changed by Dr. Albert Hoffman, although he may not have known that that was who was ultimately responsible. And 20 years after this, this man's name would be printed on a document that had his name right next to the name of Pont Saint-Esprit. This document was a formal request from the CIA, sent to a member of a government commission that was investigating the unethical behavior of that agency, requesting that this commission member do all he could to bury the files that were sure to come up in these investigations, especially those regarding this man and regarding this village. Now, this man had worked for the Special Operations Division of the U.S. Army. This man's name, as some of you may already know, was Frank Olson. And this man is known to be one of the only direct fatalities related to the United States Army's experiments in mind control known as Project MK Ultra, after he either jumped or was pushed from a hotel window 9 days after ingesting a substance created by Dr. Albert Hoffman, a substance we know today as LSD, at what he supposed was a work retreat. My friends, this has been an introduction to our first series of 2019, the United States government and army experiment known as MK Ultra. That time when we just gave people acid to see what would happen. And over the next few episodes, we are going to look at some of the craziest and most terrible ways that the government ever perpetrated evil on its own citizens, or theoretically, the citizens of another country as well. Now, the real smoking gun in this, for me, is that years after this effect, when the individuals of the Sandoz Chemical Company, when they were interviewed about Pont Saint-Esprit, and they did not know they were being interviewed, they were basically drinking with somebody who was doing research. And when he brought up Pont Saint-Esprit, they said, the secret of Pont Saint-Esprit is that it was not the bread at all. And that's what we're going to be talking about these next few weeks. Jason, what do you think?
You betrayed me.
This is not even a conspiracy Jason just doesn't understand.
It's adjacent.
MK Ultra is probably one of the biggest things that we've ever had requested on the show. We get people asking for it literally monthly, at least, either an email or someone on Twitter or Facebook. So we're going to do this right. Like I said, one of the good things about this break is it's going to give us the time to devote to the research that we need to do. And that is exactly what I plan to do with MK Ultra.
Lovely.
Jason.
Yes.
You all right?
I'm stoked.
I thought that was a pretty dang good, like, turn at the end. I was pretty proud of that as I was writing it out. Guys, we are so happy to be here. We're so happy to have made it into 2019 with the rest of you, and we're not going anywhere. We'll be here through 2019. We'll be here through 2020. We'll be here through 2021, 2022.
Sam, stop making promises.
I know. That's pretty wild. We'll just have to see about that. But I can guarantee you that we are going to have an excellent year, and it's all due to you guys being fantastic friends of the show. So I've got nothing else today. Jason's ready for this to be over.
Yeah.
Now,
I love how frequently you have to reassure everyone that we're sticking around.
I know.
You're just doing it to reassure yourself.
Kind of. Yeah. Let us know what you think about everything.
Lovely.
Now I'm going to go ahead. I'm going to thank some people, if that's okay.
Sure.
I would like to go ahead and thank the people who went ahead and gave us our most recent listener. What am I trying to say?
What ratings. Are you trying to say?
Ratings and reviews in the iTunes store. We just like to thank everybody who did that. And we're going to go ahead and thank CC Pollard, Luke Reiser, New Version Thumbs Down Emoji, Hearts of Machines, and DHawk64. Now, Hearts of Machines, they didn't leave us the most favorable review. I'd like to call them out specifically because they went through and are so passionate about this that they wrote in their review, Die Hard is not a Christmas movie. Well, that is how passionate they are, but they're just wrong.
Yeah.
And Ray Walden, you're wrong. I'm sorry to call you out this way. Die Hard is a Christmas movie, but guess what, guys? It's the new year. It's not up for discussion anymore. You have to wait another 50 weeks.
Exactly.
And then we can talk about it again. So now I'd like to go ahead and read DHawk64's. They say, positive and consistently good podcast. I've been listening to Not Alone for a year now, and I have been impressed by its constant quality.
You fool.
Yeah. Hold the wool over your eyes. Sam and Jason are like old friends who I get to spend an hour or so with every week going over different paranormal topics. Sam has a knack for finding subjects I haven't heard of before. Jason's perspective is always appreciated, although I am waiting for the day he believes something. Keep up the great work and thank you. I agree.
My pessimistic outlook shall endure.
2019 is going to be a year where Jason does not change in the least, and that's fine. The other people that we would like to thank are our new patrons, and we do have two new patrons. So we'd like to thank WitchBoy69. Nice. Woo!
Is nice a part of the name?
No. Oh, okay. That was my own little addendum. Woo! Witch boy. And we'd like to thank Victoria B. Thank you, Victoria. Jason, I just left me hanging.
I'm sorry.
That's fine.
Victoria.
Yeah, Victoria. Like I said, guys, focusing more on Patreon is going to be a really big part of this whole adjustment. So if you guys are interested in getting more bonus content, like I said, we're going to be doing at least one episode a month there. So you'll have at least three episodes a month. And so you only have to go 1 week a month without an episode in that way. That's not too terrible. You can go to Not Alone Podcast, or no, you can go to patreon.com/Not Alone Podcast. Other than that, guys, even if you can't write a review in the iTunes store, even if you can't if you're not at a place where you're able to donate anything, that's okay. We still love you. We still appreciate you. You can reach out to us through notalonepodcast@gmail.com. You can connect with us on Facebook. You can join our Facebook group. Remember, we are Not Alone, a community for the strange. You can follow me on Instagram at Not Alone. I'm Beer Lord Elfbane. Jason is
Mighty Moit.
Mighty Moit. And we together are Not Alone Pod, although sure. I'm the one who does the tweeting.
I don't have a say.
You could. I gave you the logins.
You don't want me to have a say.
Anyway, it has been an honor podcasting with you all. I am looking forward to it for the next at least year to come. We'll reevaluate later. And I really hope that we can all get through this together. So, guys, thanks so much for being friends of the show. Jason, who did it last week?
I have no idea.
Crap. We had a system.
It was evens and odds. I think, was I the odds and you're the evens?
Okay, that's fine.
New year, we'll start there.
New year,
this
new me.
This is number 90, right?
All right. I think so.
Cool. You're evens, I'm odds.
It's going to be really funny when somebody looks at it and it's only 89. That's okay. Remember, whether your nightmares are safely confined to the area of sleep and dream, or if they burst into the waking world, you are not alone.